And I'm joined on the line by Professor Tilly, Chief Operations Officer at the Open Democracy Advice Center. And she joins me now on the line. Professor, thank you very much for joining us here on Night Talk. Much appreciated.
That's a pleasure.
So we hear that the tribunal that was looking after Judge Motata's case that's been around since 2007 found that his conduct was racist and that it was conduct that was unbecoming of a judge. Give us a sense of what this is to mean to, I suppose, those of us who aren't au fait with the way that these kinds of tribunals operate.
Well, actually, none of us are au fait with these tribunals because they really haven't happened in South African law up until now. So this is really the first one that's made a finding. And in this case, the finding is pretty serious because they say that they recommend that the provisions of 1771A of the Constitution are invoked, which is the section that says the JSC can find that if a judge suffers from incapacity, or is grossly incompetent, or is guilty of gross misconduct, they can be removed from office. So it's the most serious finding that you can make, although that then has to be ratified by a resolution of the National Assembly.
Let's step back a little bit, Prof, and just get, I suppose, the legal matters out of the way. In 2009, we know that the North Gauteng High Court found Judge Motata guilty of drunk driving, and he was fined 20,000 rands for that. What was this tribunal investigating or dealing with that was different from the findings of the High Court in 2009? I suppose what I'm trying to get is, I'm trying to understand the mandate of this tribunal, its jurisdiction, and what it actually is there for.
Well, that's a lot of questions all in one. So let's maybe start with just what happened, which was that there was a complaint laid, quite simply. And the complaints dealt with two issues, and only two issues. So what the judge had said at the scene.
Yes.
And that was the one issue. And then the second question was how he conducted the trial. So the way that he instructed his advocates in the trial that resulted in him being found guilty of drunk driving.
Let me just bring my listeners into what it is that the judge is said to have said. Let me quote from some of the papers that were used in the document. Apparently, at the accident, the judge said, "No boor is going to undermine me. This used to be a white man's land. Even if they have more land, South Africa belongs to us. We are ruling South Africa." I close the quotes. This is what the judge is said to have said to the family that was recording him as he was protesting after he had crashed into the wall, I'm told, Prof. Would that be correct?
Yes, that's right. So that was one of the complaints that was made, and the tribunal upheld the complaint.
Yes. All right. And then so there was that aspect of that moment, and then, of course, how he dealt with the trial. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So what happened in that trial is that he said through his advocates to the court that he was not drunk. And the tribunal is quite careful in its finding. What it says is, look, it's not that he was found guilty of drunken driving. We're not saying that is the problem here. The problem is that he ended up through instructing his counsel in that way, he ended up misleading the court, and that is not the conduct appropriate to a judge.
So there is a standard, if I understand you correctly, Prof, that judges are held to above and beyond what the rest of us are held to in terms of the law. So there was the drunk driving case for which he was found guilty. He paid 20,000 rands for that particular case. But you are saying to me that the tribunal investigates the conduct of judges beyond, I suppose, what the rest of us, mere mortals, would be subjected to.
Well, I'm not sure that it's that much further than we are required to. I mean, if you or I were in, let's say, the workplace and we lied about something, we would be dismissed.
Yeah.
And that's something that we would kind of expect to follow.
Yeah.
The thing with judges is that they can't be dismissed. You don't just get to have a disciplinary inquiry and dismiss a judge.
Yes.
It's a really serious thing to do. And what the court, or what the tribunal rather looked at in this instance was really whether the conduct here of the judge was gross misconduct.
Yes.
And they said, look, you know, because he advanced a defense in the criminal trial, which he knew not to be true.
Yes.
That is conduct which is unacceptable in a judge. This is now a judge in a court case, in a courtroom, putting forward a defense which he knows to be a lie. That's really where the court then says, okay, the tribunal, I keep calling it a court, but the tribunal then says, look, it's a question of gross misconduct. And on that basis, and on the basis of what the tribunal describes as racist language, they then say that they are prepared to make a 1771 determination and ask the JSC to find him guilty of gross misconduct.
Was the establishment of the idea that he had lied based on the decision made by the High Court in 2009 for which he paid 20,000 rands, or was there other information, additional information that made the tribunal come to the conclusion that because the judge had perjured himself, he had lied by saying that he was not drunk, he must now be perhaps subjected to the considerations of Section 177. Was there something else other than the court judgment?
I know this sounds like splitting hairs, but it's not exactly that he lied.
Yeah.
It's that he intentionally advanced a defense which he knew to be untrue. And if you tell me I'm splitting hairs, I would kind of...
Because I was going to say, well, that's lying, Prof. Okay, yeah.
No, lying is if he'd gone and given evidence and been on the stand and said, I was not drunk. But so that's not what he did. What he did was allowed his advocate, who was speaking on his behalf, to put forward an argument where the defense that he advanced was that he was not drunk. And he was drunk. So I know I've just sounds like not a really important difference, but it is an important difference because it's not that he lied under oath.
Yes.
So that's not what the tribunal is finding at all. But what it is finding is that in the context of a criminal trial, when you tell your advocate to say, I didn't do it because I wasn't there, you are in effect putting forward a defense. And in this instance, that defense, which was, I wasn't drunk, was clearly not true.
Which of course is something that the tribunal would frown upon because this is such a senior officer of the court.
Well, this is the problem. If you or I did that, and we said to our attorney, you know, oh look, just tell them I wasn't there,
yeah.
And then it turns out the eyewitness in fact identifies us, and in fact we were there. Well, we would be found guilty or not guilty, but it doesn't go to the heart of the kind of work that we do if we're a teacher or a doctor. It's not connected. But if you are a judge and you're in a situation where you're in a courtroom and you are requiring your lawyer to put forward a defense which you know not to be true, then that goes to the question, the heart of the question of whether you're a fit and proper person to be a judge. And the answer here the tribunal has given is no, you're not fit and proper to be a judge.
So The tribunal has now recommended that the that section 177 of the constitution be invoked. That decision has not yet been made, but of course the seriousness of this matter is such that the very fact that the tribunal is recommending this is something that we should all be deeply concerned about with regards to Judge Motata. Who makes the decision ultimately?
Well, it will have to go to the JSC, who will have to then make a decision, will have to make a finding. And if they do make that finding, the second thing that has to happen is that the National Assembly has to call for the judge to be removed. And that's a resolution of the Assembly, and it has to be by two-thirds majority. So there's still, you know, steps to go. Removing a judge is an incredibly serious thing. It goes to the heart of whether the judiciary can be independent. They have absolute security of tenure. So judges, you know, there's no precedent around us using Section 177. So this is very new territory, and we'll have to see exactly how the procedure works.
Something keeps gnawing at the back of my mind, Prof, as to this tribunal. Is it a judicial? Is it a body that is incorporated in terms of the law? Who are they? Why do they have this kind of power? You understand what I'm trying to say? I'm trying to understand what are they? Are they a court? They're not a court. Who are they?
It's a judicial conduct tribunal, and they're appointed in terms of the Judicial Service Commission Act. And the idea is that when you have a complaint about a judge, you send your complaint to the Judicial Services Commission. But that's a very big body. I mean, that's, I think, 24 people who sit, and we would mostly know about them because they sit twice a year to appoint judges. But they have this other function around discipline. And at the point at which they've decided that a charge is serious, they will then refer it to a judicial conduct tribunal, which is set up in terms of the Act. And then they sit and they hear evidence. So they heard evidence in January of this year. And this is now the order that the tribunal is handing down in terms of the evidence that was led.
In all this time, since 2007, since the event of the drunk driving incident and the crashing in of the wall, has Judge Motata been practicing as a judge, or has he been suspended? And if he was suspended and not practicing, was he being paid?
Yes, he was suspended, and yes, he was being paid.
All right. My guest is Professor Alison Tilley, and the coordinator of the Judges Matter Project. And we're talking about the case, which you would have heard of today, of Judge Ngola Motata, who was found guilty of a drunken driving in 2009, paid a 20,000 rand fine. But a tribunal that oversees, I suppose, the conduct of judges has found that he has acted in a way that is unbecoming a person who holds his office as a judge in this country, and has therefore recommended that he be, Prof, struck off the role of judges? How do we say that, you know?
You usually use the word impeached.
Impeached, okay. That he be impeached. Your thoughts about this? Here's the thorny issue that I wanted to reserve for this part of our conversation, Prof. He was also found to have conducted himself in a racist manner. Talk to me about that. What was it about his conduct that brought the tribunal to the conclusion that his conduct and perhaps what he said was fundamentally racist?
Well, they had a look at the language that he used, and you quoted a number of the sentences that he said while he was in his car.
Yes.
And the court, the tribunal said that that they'd had a look at what he said, whether or not he'd been provoked, and what they found was that our courts have consistently held against racist conduct. They affirmed the right of South Africans to dignity, and they said that racist conduct on the part of a judge strikes at the heart of judicial integrity. And they found that he had been, conduct which militates against these attributes as a judge must amount to gross misconduct, because conduct like this undermines the key values and attributes necessary to ensure judicial authority. So
We've just had the very, very, much talked about case of Miss the lady that used the K word 48 times, Miss Momberg. Yes, and it's been a high profile case, and she has now been convicted. She's going to prison because of her utterances that would have been called racist too. What of the judge in the light of that, Prof?
Well, the two different cases with two different charges. So Ms. Momberg was convicted of crimen injuria, which is a common law crime of defamation. So it's a criminal defamation. So it's an entirely different charge with a different set of things that you have to prove. When people talk about the two different things, they talk about them as being racist, but I think we must understand that's using language quite loosely, because it's finding two quite different things. And in this instance, what they are talking about is this conduct which undermines the key values and attributes necessary to ensure judicial authority.
How are they different?
Well, because one is a criminal charge that's dealt with in a magistrate's court, and it has to be proven beyond reasonable doubt, and it's a very old kind of remedy which goes back to Roman times, whereas this is a test for whether or not somebody is a fit and proper person in terms of the legislation and constitution which create the position of a judge. So it's two different things.
I'm sure you're aware, Prof, of the call for consistency and even-handedness in general society at the moment around the issue of charges of racism. There are people who say that a man who is an African, who is black, like Professor Mutata, cannot be charged for racism because black people cannot be racist, is, I suppose, the theory that underpins that argument. But then there is also the call by community members in our country who feel that the charge of racism is not evenly and consistently applied on South Africans in a consistent way. And one could have the arguments to say that, the histories of the different peoples of this country are different. They require a different approach. We can have all of those things. But I suppose from the position of a South African, just a lay person, Joe Bloggs, whatever color he may be, looking at this particular case, given all of the conversations we have around race and race relations in this country, and perhaps to add the issue of Vicky Momberg into the mix, some people might be arguing that, wait a second, yes, I hear you, Prof, that this is an issue that deals with the probity, the properness of the judge to keep his position as a judge, but ultimately help us and guide us. How do we understand the issue of somebody who has been found guilty of racist conduct and somebody that has been found guilty of racism in the case of Vicky Momberg? How do we reconcile that in our minds as just South Africans? How do we deal with this such that it gives us a sense that our laws, our lores, our conventions, our regulations are even-handed, or should we forget about that?
Well, I think that it's certainly not possible for me to try and explain or justify or create a sense that the law on the subject is a coherent, you know, single piece of legislation that treats everybody in the same way, because we deal with racism in many different forms. So we deal with racism in the workplace, and that's one, you know, area that we then use the Labor Relations Act and legislation around employment equity. And then you might have a criminal context where you look at somebody who is involved in a hate crime, and racist feelings then can be used in terms of looking at the new hate crimes legislation. They're proposing that would then be something that aggravates your sentence. So we have all of these different contexts in which racism happens.
Yes.
And we have a lot of different legislative ways of dealing with it, which have different outcomes. So sometimes it would be a civil outcome and sometimes a criminal outcome. So it's because it's such a very difficult problem that appears in so many different ways, the law deals with it in many different ways. So it's difficult to create one coherent system which deals with everything in the same way. I mean, I think what is very interesting in this finding is that the tribunal clearly talks about the judge as being the language that the judge has used as being racist. And there is a debate about whether, given the structural nature of racism, whether it is ever possible for a black person to be guilty of racism. And I think that that's this judgment is certainly using that language. And that's something that I think is, you know, definitely worth looking at and thinking about and talking about, whether that is in fact how the tribunal should have approached this language.
Yep.
It is certainly how the tribunal has dealt with what they have described as racism in this case.
Prof, I want to thank you very much for your time and thank you very much for just giving us a little more light into this very, very interesting and perhaps complicated matter. I really appreciate your time.
That's a great pleasure.
All right. Professor Alison Tilley, the coordinator of the Judges Matter Project. Your thoughts on this matter? Would love to take your calls on 011-883-0702.